And I even feel guilty about saying this now. Like, life's good at the moment. I've now got two kids that, when I'm in this world, I feel guilty about them as well, because there's people who go through this and they don't get kids. I'm very kind of aware of that.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Welcome along to the Still Parents podcast, supported by Global's Make Some Noise. I'm Dan here with Ryan and Matthew from the Lily May Foundation. You all right,
Ry? I'm fine.
How you doing, Matt?
All good, thanks, mate.
Let's introduce our guest joining us in the studio. His name is James Hutton. Hello, James. How are you, sir?
Hi, slightly anxious, obviously. Yeah. This is something I haven't kind of been through in public before. Yeah. You know, I've spoken to a lot of people about it, but...
Don't worry, we'll bash that anxiousness out of you.
Yeah, 12 years down the line, and I finally kind of plucked up the courage, and I feel like I'm at the place where I can kind of...
Wow.
It's really good.
Well, let's... We'll pretty much get straight into that then. So before we do that, just a little bit about you, so our audience and anyone listening, especially for the first time, knows who you are, what you do for a living, and your other half.
I work for E.ON. No booing, please.
For people not from the UK, could you explain what E.ON is?
Okay, so E.ON is an energy provider, and therefore no one likes us because we take money off them and everyone thinks it's too expensive.
I was wondering whose Lambo was outside.
Yeah.
No, he arrived by helicopter.
Yeah. So I work for a fairly big company.
Yeah.
Yeah, I work on kind of the trading floor, but I'm not a trader. I just kind of do like fancy invoicing and stuff like that. Yeah, I've been there for like 22 years now. I don't think I'll ever leave unless they pay me to leave.
These bonuses are really good. Yeah.
And your other half is called?
She's Natalie.
Natalie. How long have you guys been together for? I always ask this to every guest because it's hilarious, because most of the male guests, in fact, sorry, every male guest never knows how much it is.
It's 22 years. It'll be 22 years on September the 16th.
Whoa, bang on. You got the date bang on as well.
And then married for 14 years.
Okay.
Married for 14 years. Yeah. Okay, well, congratulations. And so it's Natalie, is it?
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Now, you said straight away at the start, it's 12 years since you lost your baby and it was Annabelle.
That's right, yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you haven't opened up a lot about it in that time or dealt with things or publicly dealt with things.
Yeah, publicly. I think to the point where I'm just going to tell complete strangers out loud, it's not naturally come up in a conversation. Yeah, I'm deliberately trying to do that. And I get the plug in early, but it's because we're doing, I'm finally doing the charity. Well, I've always wanted to do a big fundraiser for Lily May Foundation because of how much they helped us out.
Yeah.
I know how much of a nause I'm going to be when I'm doing it. So I know.
At least I know where you're from now. You've just come out with nause. So you're a Midlander then, from around here.
Oh, yeah. I was born in Solihull Hospital 45 years ago.
Again, for our non-English audience, could you explain what nause means?
I'm going to be very annoying to a lot of people. When I'm fundraising, I'll put it out there. I talk about it for the minute I've decided doing it. It's pretty much all I talk about. But also, if you say to me, oh yeah, I'll sponsor you, that's in blood as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, right, you're on them.
Yeah. Have a list of all the people that that say that, and it'll be like, no, I won't let it go until they've done it all. So
knocking at the door at 3 a.m.
100%.
So what is the challenge? When is the challenge?
So it's 12th of June.
Okay.
We're going to be walking 26.2 miles, otherwise known as a marathon. We're raising it for money for three charities, Lily May, Mind and Ronald McDonald House.
That's fantastic.
Wonderful, isn't it?
Is that something you train for?
Well, I started training and then I kind of got up to half distance fairly quickly and then decided it was going to be easy and then stopped.
Right.
I think...
I love the honesty.
Yeah, Easter hit. Started eating the chocolate again. Got a bit comfortable. But then we did kind of like a three-quarters distance on Saturday.
Yeah,
20 miles. Yeah. I mean, I'm 45 now.
Yeah.
My legs knew I'd done it. My right knee was really quite hurting when I'd done it. And all of this is kind of tying in because what I always wanted to do was signify, and I'm moving into kind of the bit of the story now, is when my wife was in hospital, it was about a week. I don't really know because I blocked that kind of week out of my memory as much as I can.
Yeah.
But occasionally, obviously, I had to leave the hospital and come back home. And there were points at which I had to do that when I had no idea what I was going back to and whether I'd be going back to one or two people or none or whatever. So it was what I wanted to do was kind of signify the difficulty of going, of having to go back home and do that. Yeah. And so having Ronald McDonald House and them kind of understanding that that's what parents go through, therefore putting it right next to the hospital.
Yeah.
It all just linked up really nicely. So initially there was the, I have not been through this physical experience. The relationship that my wife has kind of built up with this person that's growing inside her, I don't understand. So I've got to kind of respect that and make sure, for want of a better phrase, she stays on the planet.
Yeah.
Right? So there's that element of it. But then I think also after that, there's possibly a bit of a, it that maybe carries on of like, I don't know when it's okay for me to say that I went through some shit as well.
Do you feel guilty?
Well,
did you feel guilty? It's like you weren't supposed to, you're not deserving of having the same level of grief.
Imposter syndrome, definitely, yeah.
Mm.
You know, like, oh, I know I've been through some shit, but it's compared to the shit that my wife goes through, it's definitely, I don't want to say less, different, and it's affected us in different ways. So, yeah, I talk to all my buddies about it, and then everyone, they all deal with it different ways.
Yeah.
My specific example was that we had photos of Annabelle. Now, Annabelle was born 23 weeks and 2 days. So she was extremely small. So it was top of my fingers to just under the bottom of my wrist she was when she was born.
Can you remember the weight?
850 grams, I think.
Wow.
She looked visibly more like a baby than some other kind of pictures I've seen.
Right.
Because that was another thing that we didn't realise we were getting into, was that people are going to want to show you pictures of early stage, because that's their babies, and they will just show them to you. So, but it was still, like, the skin was fairly translucent still. And if you are someone who's kind of just had a kid or has got kids or hasn't seen anything like that before, it's going to be quite difficult to sew that. So when I went to meet my mates, I had the photos in a packet, obviously, so you couldn't definitely see them. And we'd be partway through the conversation of what was going on. I'd just go, just to let you know, there's some photos there. I know this isn't for everybody. I'm not going to judge you. Just, have a look or don't. I had one mate who I don't know if he just was just ignoring it, but he carried on the conversation not from what I said beforehand and pretended that whole thing hadn't happened.
Right.
And then I had my best mate who didn't even let me finish. I said, I've got some photos here, and he just took them out, looked at them, cried his eyes out while I was looking through them. So it's like everyone's going to deal with it differently, aren't they? So
yeah.
You find the people you can talk to. Some of those people are not the ones you'd expect.
We hear that a lot.
Yes.
What happened with you, didn't it, Matt?
Yeah.
I mean, I lost my dad when I was 21, and I had a mate that kind of said to me at the time, I've not even lost like a gerbil, so I don't know how to help you out in this situation. Yeah. I'd say after my best mate, he was an absolute legend.
Yeah.
Like, he'd just been through more life experience and he could deal with it better. So I think kind of getting to the point where you say, right, okay, life's, and I even feel guilty about saying this now, like, life's good at the moment. Right, I've now got two kids that when I'm in this kind of world, I feel guilty about them as well, because there's people who go through this and they don't get kids. I'm very kind of aware of that.
I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball, and it's not there to catch you out in any way, shape or form, but I remember you coming to one of our Living With Loss days, the very first one that we ran as a charity. And you were a completely different person then in your grief journey than you are now.
Oh, yeah.
Because I still remember, and I don't know why this sticks with me. I suppose I do in some ways, because it was, you saw a complete 360 turn in you on that day. Because I think you walked in there and thought, I've lost my dad. this grief is, it's grief. I've dealt with grief before. I can deal with this absolutely fine. And then bang, within about half an hour, you realised very quickly that it wasn't the same type of grief.
No.
And I think it was at that point that it really opened your eyes and made you understand that actually the grief that you'd experienced through losing your dad, albeit that you were 21 years old, had nothing, absolutely nothing on this type of grief at the same time.
Absolutely. When it's your first kid, and, you know, I've been banging on about how much I want kids since I was 18. Oh, I'll have a football team. Oh, I'll do this, that, and the other. And you just look at yourself, back at yourself, then you think, what a twat. Well, you weren't. Do you know what I mean? Like, in this world, when you've been through something like this and everyone's banging on about kids, oh, you're going to have another one, you're going to do this, and there's all this stuff, you just think, oh.
It's like it's on a conveyor belt and this is just what happens. Oh, yeah, we get married, we have kids. There's no bumps in the road. It's the fairy tale.
The fairy tale,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And it's just like my first experience of being a dad was essentially to decide to let my kid pass away, pretty much.
Mm.
I don't know what would have been, I don't know if it would have been better or worse if I hadn't had that 6 hours. It's one of those things where you just go through all these permutations in your mind, don't you? And the long and short of it is, it's just shit.
Mm.
And there's nothing you can do to change how shit it was. I'm even now thinking, but now I feel guilty because I got to spend that time and Natalie didn't. So maybe that's why we don't kind of talk about this kind of thing very much. And it makes me anxious now because I don't want to upset my wife by, you know, saying anything wrong on this podcast. But at the same time, it's still... I've still got to get through it.
How do you deal with that? And any differences on how that has evolved in the last 12 years and ways that you've learned to cope and self-care? Look after yourself.
I don't think I have dealt with it. I think it's just, you know, maybe I'm a little bit more at peace at the fact that if I need to talk to somebody about it, I've got people I need to talk to about it and I can go through it. But I'm here to support my wife.
Mm.
That's what I'm here to do. So it's finding other ways to do it. And kind of this is therapy and doing the walk is therapy. And I think maybe...
Channeling it into something.
Yeah. Mm. And I get where I kind of... Maybe I'm where Ryan and Amy were. I don't know if it's the same kind of thing where like now it can live on through me kind of talking about it and I don't have to kind of pretend it anymore. But there's it's for a good cause and to raise money as opposed to just me maybe looking for sympathy or something like that.
Can I just pick up on one thing you said when you said the word pretend? Was there a persona you were, a public persona maybe around friends or members of family you weren't being entitled, shielding them from, or maybe even yourself from where you were at?
Yeah, because... Grief's hard enough as it is. It also only lasts... The kind of sympathy, empathy that you get after grief, in my eyes, it's about 2 weeks. Unfortunately, I've been through this quite a lot. There's been quite a few people that I've lost. Mm. And I just kind of find like you've got about 2 weeks. You've maybe got about a month with people who are closest to you.
Then they're back on their schedule.
But life does go on.
Yeah.
People move on with other stuff and... You can't just... I mean, with my dad, I think it went on for too long and there were people that I'd lost because they were like, are you ever going to smile again? They had to like not speak to me for a month. You're too intense about it. So possibly it was a learned behaviour from...
Right, okay.
Everyone's probably... And also, like, it's such a... I don't like using the word taboo because I kind of feel like that implies that there's something wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a difficult subject to talk to people about. You don't know what other people have been through and they're through.
Yeah,
they're at different stages of it. So I think maybe it's a learned behaviour from other stuff that...
Without giving too much away from knowing you, you are the sort of person that is there to support others and I would say to the detriment of your own support.
Yeah.
Because you feel that you've said it at the beginning of the podcast, I've got to be there for my wife.
Yeah.
I've got to be there for, let's say, whoever that may be. But the thing I always say to my clients who say things like that to me is, yeah, but then who's there for you? And yeah. if somebody's not there for you, because whether they don't want to engage in a conversation or they don't want to listen to how you're feeling or have a real understanding of how you're feeling, maybe through fear of, I don't know, maybe reopening a Pandora's box or something like that, then actually that whole I've got to be there for my wife or I've got to be there for other people, you're not 100% invested because you're not sorted yourself.
No, and my mum's a counsellor.
Okay.
And she was for 25 years. So believe me.
You probably had that. Yeah.
But that's easier said than done.
Oh, absolutely.
When I feel like, I'm not saying I can just deal with it by just taking it all and never looking after myself.
Mm.
But I'm pretty resilient
mm.
and I'll work it out
mm.
and I will sort it out and I'll get back to the gym. And I'll eat properly
mm.
and I'll deal with the stuff.
Do you think that between you and Natalie, you've obviously had two completely separate grief journeys,
yeah.
your own individual journeys. But then do you think you've ever explored the grief journey between you as a husband and wife?
We've done it not at length, no.
Okay.
For me, it's more about making sure Natalie's journey's going okay. Our situation is fairly unique. So because of why Annabelle was born early, Natalie had pure preeclampsia, so she had it from the start. I don't think we would have ever got a healthy child. Now, I'm just going to talk frankly. But every time I talk, you're getting a gist of this. I'm still mindful of the other people who might be listening.
I can see.
Feeling like I'm, I don't know.
You seem very wary of not wanting to upset anyone.
Not grateful for what would have happened. But, and yes, it's probably selfish saying that she would have probably, you know, she might well have been disabled if they had managed to save her. But that's, you know, not a life that we would have possibly imagined bringing into the world. And is it fair and all that kind of stuff? But, essentially, because it was like an organ transplant that went wrong, the placenta got rejected pretty much. It was more likely that it would be okay the next time. Okay. And then again, feeling guilty for having kids that are fine. I've got two absolutely perfect kids. And that's because of Annabelle. So that's how I've rationalised this in my head. Of that was not going to be. You know, we talked about the fairy tale.
Yeah.
So that wasn't the fairy tale.
Yeah.
The fairy tale for us, or the way I rationalise it anyway, I'm saying us, I'm just talking for me, is that the fairy tale is that she gave herself so that we could have two perfect kids.
We obviously, so we'd got Alfie, who was three when we lost Lily, and then we've gone on and had three healthy kids after that.
I can answer this question already because I think I know what you're going to ask.
No, it's not even a question. I'm actually going to put my, how I feel.
Yeah.
Because Bobby, our most recent daughter, who's bonkers, by the way, she has been here before. I swear to God, she's been on this earth before. I swear to God. She was born at 32 weeks because Amy had got really high blood pressure. There was a whole host of things. Had we have not lost Lily, Bobby and Amy would have died.
Yeah.
So for me, if there's a silver lining anywhere, it's that what we learned from Lily and how we've obviously built the foundation and the charity and the education that we've had over the years is that, yeah, probably I do often wonder whether Lily is the reason why Bobby's here.
What I thought you were going to mention, because you said you had kind of like a boy first, was like, we had a rainbow baby, right? So we get Jack. And then...
How old's Jack, by the way?
He's 10 now.
Okay.
So he's amazing. He was brilliant. I still don't think... I know we're not going to get fixed. It doesn't fix. I had to give an analogy to someone close to me to explain how I feel. It's like, I've got my heart. There was a hole in it. And then every new child makes my heart bigger, but the hole stays the same size, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely makes sense.
Instead of like, oh, isn't it fixed now? Well, no. Well, no, of course it's not going to get fixed. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, that question just...
the analogy I use for everybody is somewhere on your body, externally, you've got a scar. Yeah, so you'll have hurt yourself. You know, I've had my ACL done. I've got my ACL scar. And I walk around with that every single day. And 99% of the year, it doesn't bother me. But the odd day where it's damp and it's cold, my knee hurts. And that's because of that scar. The difference with this one is that the scar is internal.
Yeah.
People don't see that scar, but you're walking around with it every single day.
Using the scar analogy then, so go to part two is we get Isabel. And I would say, for me at least, I can't talk for Natalie, that hole then became a scar as opposed to a hole because I got a girl. And I didn't even know that until I got the girl.
Mm.
And yeah, it might not have been anything to do with... I never linked myself.
Mm.
And this is another area of like imposter syndrome that I've got, is that because we didn't have a full-term baby, for me, I don't know, because I haven't got anything growing inside me, I don't know if I'd made as much of a bond. I can't imagine, like as terrible as it was, I can't imagine what it's like for someone to go full-term and to have made the room up. And do all that, and then have it. So, yeah, I just think I'm not saying that like I'm over it. I could quite easily get upset now. I could cry my eyes out now if I wanted to. But there was just a point at which I think I remember us having a conversation, and we were like, "We've got to focus on the ones that are alive now. We've got to make sure they're okay, and we really got to make sure that we don't." Impact them because of what happened before. And that's a legend.
I think you've probably come to a point where you're able to manage it within your life.
Yeah.
Probably. And I was going to say what Ryan said, but come from a bit of a different angle in a sense of there's nothing wrong with actually thinking about your lost child, lost baby like that, because for a long time, obviously, you find it tough, you find it hard, but I've said it plenty of times, and I say it all the time, and I'll continue to say that I can't be sad about Callie, who we lost, all the time now, because of what she's given me.
Mm.
She's given me so much. Etta's come along. We've got Etta, who's not, I don't know whether Etta would have come along, it wasn't in our plan, whatever, but Etta's come along, she's brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant, right? Wonderful kid. Same as what you've gone on to have after Lily, right? But I look at, like I said, I look at it from a point of view of that, of that Callie, it's devastating. Whatever's happened to Callie is devastating. It always will be. But she's given me a brand new life and a whole new world. And it's given me a job and it's given me a boss. And
sorry.
That's the biggest I've seen Ryan smile all day.
but it's brought me to meet Dan, and there's so many there's so many things that have happened since we lost Callie.
Yeah.
Mm.
That I can't be sad about.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question though, Matt? Because the imposter syndrome thing, and for you, Ryan, did you guys have to deal with any similar emotions?
I mean, Ryan might disagree. I don't know if he agrees or not, but I think that you naturally, when you go through this, you almost, bluntly, this is why we started the podcast, you almost take on roles without realising. Like, I had to take on a role of support because a Crystal literally couldn't live life. So what do I do? Do I not live life as well? Or do I just keep us moving? Do I keep us going? Do I just... continue to get us through whatever we were going through, because at that point, when you first go through it, Crystal couldn't face anything. She weren't there. She's admitted on the podcast she weren't there. So I think, but as far as imposter syndrome is concerned, it's a long time ago thinking like that, but I think mine came more from the fact that I couldn't fold completely because I couldn't afford to fold completely because we'd have just...
I was especially interested in asking you, because I know you said, because obviously there's only a 2-year difference between
you and
James in terms of of your loss, wasn't it?
Yeah.
10 years and 12.
So yeah, it was possibly a bit of that, but it was more from my point of view, like I said, was the fact that just had to keep going.
Because it plays, as you said, like, and one of the reasons why we started the podcast, it was those stereotypes. And like Ryan went, because Ryan was like, you know, the stereotypical role of being the fixer.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say I don't think I suffered with imposter syndrome as such. But one thing that I did notice that came to the sort of forefront on my daily, just everything daily, was the control that I needed on everything. So I found that, so I've got a phobia of sickness. Like, I have a horrendous phobia of sickness, both throwing up and seeing other people being sick. And that got so much worse than it had ever been before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so things like phobias and stuff like that really did come to the forefront.
I remember once, actually, I said, "Don't Ryan on the phone, I got a slight cough," and Ryan went, "Don't come in tomorrow."
Yeah. So in terms of things like that, so phobias and things where I could have control over things, I got a lot worse.
Are you a control freak?
Yes.
Were you always?
Yes.
But it's just more severe?
Yes, but not as much as I was until... not as much.
Yeah, okay.
Prior to losing Lily.
Right.
But that's more of a control freak now.
But that's why I carried on managing a football at that point. I was managing football, that's why I carried on.
Because it's something, again, with that male thing,
I'm directing. I'm in charge of this.
I've got the rudder handle.
Exactly.
I know that for me, that point was, you know, I started pre-season with Gornal as manager the day after Callie's funeral. 24 hours earlier,
I remember you saying, yeah.
I had a funeral. And then I went and managed it. And then I was standing in front of a group of lads trying to motivate and ready for pre-season. It's like, but I could control that.
Day we came out of hospital, I'm on Knoll High Street trying to drum up support for a golf day.
Yeah.
Because I had control over it.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It's you go to places. And this is why it's brilliant what you're doing with the walk.
That's where I was coming back to with
you. You can control this. This is you doing something. This, as you said, it's like your therapy. It's like you'll be doing that walk, and I'm sure during that walk you will think about Annabelle so much.
Maybe I'm where you guys were, but it's taken me 10-12 years to get there.
So what?
Yeah,
exactly.
You always say it's not linear, is it?
It don't matter, does it?
So what?
It don't matter.
Yeah. And this is the problem, is that the books, the professors, the psychiatrists, psychologists, whatever you want to call them.
Stages of grief, all of that.
All talk about the stages of grief, and how people interpret it is that it's a linear process, and it's not linear in the slightest. It's like riding the fucking nemesis every single day.
But also you've got to remember that in that period I had two kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So then I've got those. So going back to how I feel, I've then got to sort those kids out and make sure those kids are okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So now I'm getting to the point now where I can walk away from the kids and the kids are going to be fine and they're at school. You know, I can even kind of go away for a weekend or whatever and not get too much guilt. I mean, I still do feel guilty and I miss them loads because I had kids because I wanted kids because I love kids and I want to be around kids all the time. So I didn't have them to be away from them. I know some people feel differently and there's nothing wrong with that, but I don't like being away from them.
I think it just shows your presence, isn't it? Your presence of mind and your emotional maturity or emotional intelligence, I think. But again, still, you've got to take that time for yourself, haven't you?
Yeah.
And been doing that for a weekend doesn't mean, he's get social services over, take his kids away.
That's just where it is actually, I think, I'm not needing to, I don't feel like, I mean, most of this time, they probably didn't need me to worry as much as I do about them. But I feel like I can go and do it, and I'm not being selfish if I do it now.
So it's Jack and Isabel. So 10 and...
Seven.
Are they asking questions? Do you talk about Annabelle?
They are aware. They know of Annabelle. It's kind of like our angel, our fairy, because obviously it started when they were little and it was difficult to explain it. But then... you get to the point where you're like, when's the best day? Because there's never going to be a best day, is there? And also, I think our kids are that they get attached to things extremely quickly.
Yeah.
So we're just very mindful that
especially in them formative years, isn't it?
So. Yeah, that they could then attach themselves to like a sister, and then I just don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a tricky one. Yeah. I think it's inevitably. I think Jack's worked it out because he doesn't ask. So that's when you kind of know, because he's got to that point.
Okay.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he's not going, what's this, what's that, what, You know, why do we talk about her? Lily May Foundation, Natalie goes running in a top, which says...
Explains it.
Explains what Lily May does.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, he's not daft.
Yeah.
Isabel gives less of a shit about, not about people's feelings, but about not knowing what it's all about.
Because she's seven.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So then Isabel would be like, who's that baby there in that photo?
Yeah.
Because that's not me or Jack.
Mm.
Yeah.
And at that moment, I was walked out of the room and I was like, oh, what was that, Natalie? What was that? And I was like, Nat.
Yeah.
What do I do? And I can't remember exactly what happened, but I think I just kind of skirted over. I don't think there is like a specific plan. I think we'll just kind of take it as it comes.
Because what feels the right way of doing it right now might not be the pertinent way to do it in a year from now. So it's whatever you feel, isn't it?
Because I lost my stepdad as well a couple of years ago, which they knew as grandpa and was the only grandpa they had.
Yeah.
And Isabel's still upset about that.
Okay.
And keeps going over it. Whereas Jack has, I think he had, it hit him all in one go. He got it all out of his way. And although he might be having feelings about it, it doesn't appear to affect him. Whereas like Isabel will go, can you get the memory box down from him? Yeah. And it's just like, do I want to introduce another one of those things?
Right, yeah.
Is this going to benefit you? I don't know. And then it's like, oh, am I then not respecting the memory of Annabelle? We're going through a common theme here. It's just wondering what's the right thing, what's the wrong thing.
But do you know what? There'll be someone listening to this episode, unfortunately, that's probably in exactly the same position and hearing your nuance on it, your take on it, or just even having that comfort of going, all right, there's someone else who's in this, my mind space.
Yeah. There isn't a right or wrong.
Mm.
You can't know what's best. I'll play through like a million scenarios in my head.
Yeah.
I think it's going back to just kind of maybe not dealing with it, not kind of doing anything.
Quickly, before we leave, because could you tell us about mentality?
Yes, I can do. So I think this is another form of my therapy. We essentially set it up because someone at work had lost three males in their lives, that took their own lives in a short space of time. And they said, that's enough. And obviously, I've been through quite a few journeys as a bloke.
Yeah.
And we really want to encourage people to start kind of talking, basically. And the walk is called Don't Man Up, Buddy Up. And it's just there to provide a safe space. I know it's a bit of a buzzword and it can feel a bit kind of softly, but it's made such a difference for people to just have a platform to come and talk and chat if they want to.
So is that what mentality is? It's a platform, is it?
Yeah, it's just a community of people, really, an opportunity for people kind of to tell their stories if they want to. We're trying to put a podcast together. With that, we have cafes where people can come in and talk. We get senior leaders to come and tell us about their journey so that people can see vulnerability from people that they think are superhumans and don't ever have any feelings, or they definitely do, and most people have been through some shit in their lives.
Thank you so much for coming on, James. Is there anything that we haven't mentioned that you would like to bring up?
No, not particularly. No, I mean, I had no kind of preconceptions about what we're going to do today, and it's good to just.
I was going to say, you look more relaxed than you did 45 minutes ago.
Yeah, I think.
Coming with the arms folded.
That's it. I had it in my head that it was just going to be this kind of massively intense conversation that was going to involve me crying my eyes out at some point, which. I mean, you'll have spotted, nearly happened a couple of times.
Yeah,
but
I did see your eyes water a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I'd like to get the message out there that it is okay.
It's absolutely fine.
I also want people to not panic and suddenly feel like you're going to jump off a building because you're crying.
Yeah.
Because there was a point at which, when I lost my dad, if you cry in public, then people think, like, the sky's falling.
If someone sees you cry, what do you want them to do?
Do you know what? It was only about a couple of years ago, I had a mentor at work, and I was talking to her, I was crying my eyes out, and she was just carried on talking to me as if not as if nothing was happening, but like talking to me about that and just not over acknowledging it,
normalized it,
but not telling me it's okay. Do you know that it was there was nothing about her that was giving me the stop crying vibes.
It was just real.
It was just like, normalized. You can go through this, you can get through it, you can have the cry, and then
that's great.
And then we can move on and we don't have to talk about you crying.
Yeah.
Whereas previous interactions have been, you get upset and everyone's like, right, you obviously need help, go over here. And that was another reason why we wanted to set up Mentality, was like, there can be like an automatic response of go and get help, but actually it's like, oh, come and have a chat, come in this place, do you want to tell your story or do you want to listen to other people having your story? Their stories kind of thing. So it's a bit more of a kind of friendly response as opposed to what can be quite a corporate response of have your own
helpline. It's exactly that, isn't it? Yeah, I think sometimes having help is just being present in that, let me be me, rather than saying, oh, you need to get help.
Yeah.
Especially if it's coming from an unqualified place.
And I think sometimes knowing you've got somewhere to go to can be enough.
Mm.
So there's possibly people that don't come to us because they're like, oh, if I needed to, I can go there. But I don't need to at the moment, so I'm fine.
Well, on that note, if you would like to find out more details, it seems like a perfect time to remind you again to click on the links in the description and you'll be able to find out more about James's challenge and also the Mentality as well and everything else which James has brought up on this episode. Thank you for joining us on this. It's been really, really insightful and interesting to listen to. We hope we can get you back on at some point as well. I want to find out, not in another 12 years.
But
at some point, if that's all right with
you. Yeah, that'd be amazing. No, really, been really good to have me. Thank you very much.
James Hudson on the Still Parents podcast. Thank you so much. Safe journey back, buddy.
Thank you.
Matthew.
See you later, Daniel.
Have you done your run today yet?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. How can you not know if you've run 10K in a day?
Yes, Daniel, I have.
Cheers, Ryan.
Cheers.
This is the Still Parents podcast. We will be back very, very soon. Take care.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.